This program is dedicated to the women and men of our armed forces.
From the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, this is Veterans Radio. And now here's your co-host for today's program, Bob Gould.
Oh, yeah, what good job. Is that your first introduction, Nina?
I think that was.
Oh, I think we, boy, too bad we don't have the applause button on that one. Yes, we remember, we're going to do that. Well, this is Bob Gould, your co-host today on Veterans Radio, and welcome to the world. Yes, you're tuning in today, and we're broadcasting from Domino's Farms right here in beautiful, beautiful Ann Arbor, Michigan. We got a good program today. Of course, they're all good, but this one happens to be special. And my co-host today is Colonel Christine Cook from the U.S. Army, and her guest is another colonel, Kathy Loss. And we won't get into that for just a moment, because I've got some other messages that have to be. Now, from time to time, we do like to give local announcements. Why do we do that? Well, I live in Washington, D.C. Well, it's to give you an idea of who's doing what, and maybe contact your local service organization or contact your local charity or the VA and to ask and see what kind of veteran events and things that you can participate in. This one happens to be at Ward Church. That's right. Well, they're going to have their annual Patriotic Pops concert this Sunday, June 9th. That's this Sunday, Patriotic Pops concert. Boy, they've got a big orchestra, and they just bring the house down. And all veterans, there's free admission for all veterans. Everybody else, I believe there's a minimum, a buck or something like that. But it goes to a good cause. It goes to the Ward Church and their veteran outreach program. So once again, this Sunday, the Patriotic Pops concert at Ward Church, June 9th. Now, that's at 5 o'clock p.m. That's right. So there will be an orchestra and a choir. And I mean, that place gets jumping because they play Aaron Copland, George Gershwin, Leonard Bernstein, etc., etc. It's for all you Americans and us patriots and us veterans who love our country and love God. Okay, so please, this is something you're going to want to share with your fellow veterans. Come on down to the Ward Church and bring the whole family. It's a family event. I guarantee you, you'll be doing some toe tapping. Okay, we're going to break right now, and then we're going to come back with my co-host, Colonel Christine Cook, right after this very important message.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
That's a real toe tapper right there. The caissons go rolling along. Of course, it's the Army theme, and very appropriate because with me sitting right across the table over here in Studio A at lovely WDEO 990 AM. Or you can go to Veterans Radio. Well, of course, yeah, you got to be the. Now, yeah, well, call somebody. Tweet, Twitter, and all that good business. I don't know all that stuff. But anyway, we've got a program today. Colonel Cook, let me introduce my cohort, Army Colonel Christine Cook, who's been on our program many times in the past and brings a lot of insight. She is currently serving in the U.S. Army Reserve. She has 27 military years. Oh, boy. Once again, we need that applause button, Nina. This is great stuff. Colonel Cook also serves as a faculty professor at the U.S. Army War College, Department of Distance Education. I hope we have some time between now and the end of the program so I can just get a little more clarification on that. But right now, Colonel Cook is going to introduce her guest, Colonel Kathy Loss. So I'm throwing it over to you. Take it away.
Okay. Now, first of all, what I would like to do is bring up the conversation that we're having, and that is this is a subject that is a controversial one, but truly it's also a subject that the majority of women in the military attempt not to talk about. Maybe they think that if we don't talk about it, it'll all go away. But this happens to be about the Women in Combat Exclusion Policy and the fact that it has recently been lifted. And we are going to be talking about how that is going to affect the military as a whole and how it affects women in the military right now. My guest is Colonel Kathy Lofts. She joined the WACS in the early 70s and has since continued to serve in the National Guard and in the Army Reserve. She is currently a colonel who works with me at the Department of Distance Education at the U.S. Army War College. And she has some interesting points of view regarding women in combat positions because she dates back to the Women's Army Corps. Kathy, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, Chris. Thank you.
Now, if you will bear with me for just a moment, I'm going to talk a little bit about women in combat, the history of it. It actually goes back over 400 years. People might remember that there were a group of people called Amazons back in the Greek days. But in addition to that, they have served in our revolution. They have served in the Civil War dressed as men. They have served in the World War I and World War II. They started getting heavily involved in nurses' corps and in personnel administration functions. And as we moved forward into the 60s and 70s with the Equal Rights Amendment and the attempts to get that one passed, the concept of women on a battlefield getting shot at and hit became something that people were very, very concerned about. And so that was the major reason why the Equal Rights Amendment did not pass. Now, Kathy, when did you get into the WACS?
In May of 1973. So if you do the math, that's 40 years ago.
Okay, that's true.
Amen.
Almost to the day.
Amen.
And the Equal Rights Amendment, of course, that was around in 1972 time frame, but they spent the next several years attempting to get it passed by all 50 states, correct?
Correct.
So did that inform your decision to go into the military, that Equal Rights Amendment, by any chance?
No, actually, naively, I wanted to be in the Army when I was 12 years old. And so I kind of planned everything up to that. When I went to enlist, however, they weren't quite as open to what I wanted to do in the military.
Which was what?
I actually wanted, my dad was an electronics technician, and I wanted to go into electronics. That was an inexpensive way to be trained in that field. And the recruiters just kept trying to make me a secretary. And finally, when they saw my test scores, they go, oh yeah, you could do that. So I was actually the first female to go through the Common Basic Electronics training and one of two females to go into the Teletype Equipment Repair and Field Radio Repair MLS training.
So did you feel a little bit odd being, you know, the person who was first in that field who was a female?
Well, yeah, you had to kind of feel a little bit odd in that. You were kind of alone, and quite frankly, at that time, maybe they were even, like, culturally more prepared in the sense that they kind of protected me. And so I had my own room in the barracks. I had to report to the first sergeant each morning so that he could make sure everything was going okay and nobody was giving me any kind of problems. And once they realized that I could do the work, and in this case do the work better than most of the men, then the acceptance was a little bit better. But, yeah, at first it was very unusual. And even at the end of the Common Basic Electronics training, I was tied for honor student, and I had one instructor tell me, there's no way a female is going to get honor student of this program.
Ooh.
Yeah, ooh, right.
Even though you probably deserved it.
I'm sorry, I just had to do that. Ouch. Oh, that's awful.
Oh, yes, yeah. And at that time, they really didn't have the systems in place that you could do anything about it. I mean, the Army, you know, what a senior NCO said was like God saying it, you know?
Well, and you bring up some interesting points because of the fact that the culture of the Army, especially when women were coming in, there were kind of unspoken rules and unspoken limits. Were you aware of the limitations that that were facing you? I mean, I realize that they wanted you to be a secretary, and you finally were able to convince them that you could do something other than that. But did you notice those kinds of limitations throughout the 1970s?
You know, when I look back, I realize how naive I was. Because I really, every time I went into something, I thought I had the whole world ahead of me. And so when I'd bump up against a wall, it seemed very soft at the time. I thought, well, this is just something everybody has to go through. And it isn't until you look at it backwards, you know, in hindsight, that you go, whoa, you know, those weren't there for everyone. Those limitations weren't there for the men.
Interesting. Now, you went into the officer corps. By this time, you were in the National Guard, correct?
Correct. That was in 1985 that I received my officer commissioning.
Okay, so you were about a year before me or so. And at the time, did they encourage you to become an officer, or did you feel like you had to work against that?
In Michigan at the time, it was very encouraging, actually. With the system they had was they looked at everybody's test scores and they mandated the officer test. And then everybody that passed the test, they moved into a room and said, here's your opportunity. And I asked the person that was administering that, I said, well, hey, can I go to the school and just not become an officer? And everybody looked at me really weird because, I mean, I was, you know, here's 12 years as an NCO. What do I want to become an officer for, right? And they said, oh, no, but we really want you to go to the school and you'll have up to 18 months after completing the school to make your decision, but we really want you to go. So they were very encouraging, actually.
Now, were you aware of what you could and couldn't do as an officer, female type?
Yes, and then you and I have discussed if we had the opportunities to do combat, would we do it? Absolutely not. But, yes, it was...
True statement.
It was very, very well outlined what you could and could not do.
Okay, so since we said that, let me say, I'll jump in, since I said that I got my commission in 1986, a couple years behind Kathy, that when I got into the military, I was pretty clear exactly what I could and couldn't do in the military. I knew that there were five branches of the officer corps that I could not join. They were infantry, field artillery, combat engineer, armor, and combat aviation. We did have a couple of helicopter pilots that were doing medical and logistics runs, but they did not get into the combat aviation until much later. So I was quite aware of what I could and couldn't do. I personally was just a, you know, 8 or 9 when the ERA, the Equal Rights Amendment, was going through all of its problems. And I was also very well aware that it was basically the whole woman in combat that shot the whole thing down. They were very concerned about the concept of the perception of what it would be like to have a woman killed on the battlefield. But to be truthful, as Kathy has alluded, most women who joined the military didn't really want to be in the infantry or the armor at the time. And quite frankly, a lot of us, I personally think, thought that we wouldn't necessarily have the physical ability to do what a lot of the soldiers did at that time. What are your thoughts on that, Kathy?
Yes, I agree. And I think more than physical, I was more concerned with the psychological, the emotional piece. I was perfectly happy being combat service support and trained in arms. And if I had to use arms, that I would do so. But my concern was more that I didn't actually want to be a hunter.
Yes, exactly.
That was my perception of the combat arms at that time. Since then, of course, I've realized that it is more about keeping peace than making war. But that was my major concern.
Well, and of course, we were also dealing with the fact that we came up post-Vietnam War, which the perception at the time that the media was able to foster was the concept that they were hunters, even if truly that was not what was actually happening in Vietnam either. So, the other thing that ended up happening, of course, over the last 20 years is that as we went into Desert Storm, as we went into Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom, more and more women, because they were in the military already, were getting involved in scenarios where they were actually in a combat situation, even if they did not intend to be. The original concept was that we could not be with units that were on the front line of combat, but we lost the concept of the front line of combat. So as we were going into the late 80s, early 90s, did you notice this kind of transition that was happening in your own service support field?
Oh, my gosh, yes. And going into the late 80s and early 90s, of course, then I was company commander, and I saw the challenges of men and women training together, working together, and in many cases, sleeping in the same tent or building. And so working together, sleeping together, playing together. And, the transition was opening opportunities, but it also made folks more aware of the, the lack of preparation within the culture to so closely mix male and female.
Right. So this actually kind of connects to something that has become a serious issue in the last couple of months, of course, too, is the whole concept of the sexual harassment and sexual assault things that are happening in the military. I'm not sure exactly how much I want to get into that particular conversation, because certainly that's a can of worms for an entire hour. But I do think that the culture contributed to it because of the concept of what exactly should women be doing in the military and how did they fit in. Would you agree with that?
I would definitely agree with that. And yes, the sexual harassment topic could be a whole other show. But I also believe that by integrating women into the military more fully, that it really faced our whole society. I mean, it challenged our whole society and how men and women work together. And as usual, the military kind of remained on the forefront of that move and that awareness.
Right, because we're a microcosm of the macrocosm, if you know what I mean. We're a small version of a larger whole, which is the U.S. public.
Absolutely.
Right. Now, the truth is also that part of the Equal Rights Amendment was having issues, not just with the concept of a woman being killed on the front lines, but also that possibility of there being sexual relations on the battlefield, which unfortunately, you know, I hate to bring it up, but that is the case, that they were worried about that. They were also worried about the fact that men would try to protect women at the expense of their other buddies. Did you see any examples of this in your own time?
Either one of those topics?
Yeah, either of them.
Yes, of course, and I don't know that the relationships that you might have within the military microcosm are any different than in a business or a college or anything else. But those, you know, folks are thrown together for longer periods of time. It's more than 8 hours a day, and then you go home to a normal life. You're thrown together for, you know, 24/7, 365, and you don't have the other reality to go back to on a daily basis. So yeah, definitely the sexual piece is there. I think in terms of protecting a female over a male, I think we were looked at differently. I think that a buddy was a buddy was a buddy. So I think that there was maybe misunderstandings in some areas, and I think in a lot of ways men let women get away with a lot.
I would have to agree with that, actually.
Like monthly illnesses, let's say, that were not really real, but women knew they could get away with it, and men let them get away with it.
Yeah, and so I know that you and I have discussed the concept of, you know, there are some women in the military who, I hope they don't take this the wrong way, but basically give women in the military a bad name.
Right, just because there are some men that give.
That's true, too.
A bad name, so.
That is absolutely true.
So I didn't see the protection piece, and that actually was one of my worries, especially as a commander, and I didn't see that. I only saw the ignorance of what women can do and then some women allowing that to happen. But then there were other women that showed the men, hey, I can do whatever you can do.
Being more man than the men are.
Kathy, I can't really sit still much longer. I'm rolling my eyes here, and Colonel Cook's looking, and we're both rolling our eyes at some of the comments. But, you know, so much of that, We're just landmines that were thrown down. As it's almost like you couldn't answer that. Well, men are going to overprotect women. Oh no! I mean, what kind of statistical information? What kind of research? Of course not. These were misogynistic, as far as I'm concerned, comments. But they were done, you know, in such a smiling, sneering manner. Oh yeah, and then we're going to have that. I guarantee you. And I love the way you answered that, Kathy. I love it. That's right. A buddy's a buddy's a buddy. Bingo. That's right. I asked a guy who was jumping on Normandy, 0130 hours on an airplane. I said, what were you thinking about? And he was ready to jump into darkness. And I'm wondering, okay, this is it. What were you thinking about? Your pension, your mom, your wife, your kids, your life, what? He said and thought for a moment, I didn't want to let my buddy down. And that's what we're talking about here. And that's what this is all about. And anyway, Colonel Cook, we're down. Oh,
about
boy,
we have five minutes
to the break. So, and I want to invite our listeners. Now, I'm sure you're out there, guys. Come on. You got a comment. So call us. That's right, at 877-573-7825. 877-578-7825. Sound off. We pay the nickel. We pay the freight. Give us a call. Back to you, Colonel.
Okay, well, one of the things I was going to say is that while we may be rolling our eyes at some of the comments that Kathy said that she was dealing with as she was coming up in the military, the truth is that while in the military we may not have been having as much trouble with this, this is what the Congress was hearing. This is what the American public was hearing, and this was what they were making their decisions on. So while we went forward into the 1990s and determined that actually women were able to support not just behind the lines but closer up, and that they were in positions like trucking, which basically went straight into the front line, or MPs, which were basically securing the front line, that perhaps the combat exclusion policy needed to be refocused. So in 1994, they came up with the Ground Combat Exclusion Policy, and that was the one that basically said that the women in the military could be in virtually every branch, but there were specific areas where they could not be co-located, where it was in the biggest threat areas. There were some serious issues with this particular policy, but it did go in 1994, and then when Operation Iraqi Freedom came about, what we discovered was there was no such thing as being able to not be co-located with these units, especially if you were an MP, especially if you ended up on the staff of an infantry headquarters, that these were going to be areas that were going to be there. So I would have to say, and Kathy, correct me if I'm wrong, but what I started seeing was a lot of male officers kind of turning a blind eye. Yes, we have a woman over here, and she's right on the front line, but, you know, she's on the headquarters staff, and so therefore doesn't count for the co-location policy. Did you see any of that?
Yes, I agree. And actually, you probably can go a lot farther back in history in terms of turning a blind eye, too, when you consider nurses and other professions that really did end up on the battlefield. And as you've already mentioned, the lines that the forward area of the end of the battlefield doesn't exist anymore. The battlefield is everywhere. So, yeah, they either out of ignorance or out of intent turned a blind eye.
Right. So then, let's see. I'm trying to look at my notes. You know, we've got thousands of things to talk about. And we only have about a minute and a half before we get to the break. But one of the things that I would like to talk about as we go forward to the next section is what these limitations of us not being allowed to be in combat positions have done as a whole for our opportunity for growth and for our senior leadership, since both you and I are in the senior leadership, that we can talk about that how it has affected us. So we've got – I'm counting down the clock. This is not helping. But anyway –
I'll tell you, you know what might make it a little bit easier? Let's go to a break right now, and let's see if we can get that whiteboard working. You're listening to Veterans Radio right here on WDEO 990 AM, or at veteransradio.net on the web. We're going to be right back with Colonel Cook and her guest today. And, oh, we're talking about women's issues. I'm sure, guys and gals, that you, and this is both military and non-military listeners, you do have a comment. So call us at 877-573-7825. That's 877-573-7825. We'll be right back right after these messages.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them.
Specialist Ross McGinnis threw his back against a grenade thrown into his Humvee, saving the lives of his crewmates. Details after this.
It's pouring rain. It's real dark outside. Your heart starts beating really, really fast. You've never done anything so hard in your life. This is boot camp. This is the real thing now. It's such extreme pain, you don't understand how you can finish. I began to feel that there was no way I was ever going to have my title, U.S. Marine. It takes special inner strength, courage, and desire to do this. I was just thinking, I'm so close. I'm so close. And when I finished, I was like, I'm done. I did it. The moment I will never forget is when this drill instructor that I admire so much comes up to me straight in front of me, put her arm on my shoulder and said, "Good morning, Marine."
PFC Summer Volkman became a United States Marine. Can you? Call 1-800-MARINES. Maybe you could be one of the few and the proud.
On December 4th, 2006, McGinnis was manning the turret in the last Humvee of a six-vehicle patrol in northeast Baghdad, when an insurgent threw a grenade from the roof of a nearby building. As he stood up to get ready to jump out of the vehicle, as he'd been trained to do, officials say McGinnis realized the other four soldiers in the vehicle did not know where the grenade had landed and did not have enough time to escape. He threw his back against the radio mount and smothered the explosive with his body. McGinnis was killed instantly, while the other four men survived. He was awarded the Medal of Honor posthumously by President Bush on June 2nd. 2008. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
For the past 100 years, Amish furniture craftsmen have placed great value upon the beauty and quality of their work, with great attention paid to the details of the wood. Each board is then hand-selected to match the specific furniture in mind and in achieving the desired look of the finished piece. At Naked Furniture of Ann Arbor Showroom, you will find displays of this fine craftsmanship that you can afford and own. Now is the time. You can visit Naked Furniture at 3570 Washtenaw Avenue and experience this fine quality for yourself. The furniture consultants at Naked Furniture of Ann Arbor are there to show you the fine details of Amish furniture. See for yourself the fine quality Amish furniture. Go to Naked Furniture of Ann Arbor, 3570 Washtenaw Avenue, or visit their website, nakedfurnitureofannarbor.com. Okay, we're back once again on Veterans Radio, right here on WDEO and VeteransRadio.net. And with me, my co-host today is Colonel Christine Cook. And we do have a caller on the line. Colonel Cook, you want to go ahead and cue that person on? You got to give it a good... Yeah, there you are. Well, welcome to Veterans Radio.
How are you?
We're fine. And what's your question?
No, I have more of a statement than a question. I just wanted to say that it's a complete double standard. A female has different physical training tests than me. If I'm on the battlefield with this woman, is she capable, a 150-pound woman, of pulling me, a 230-pound woman, a man, off the battlefield? It's a complete double standard. A woman should not be on the battlefield.
Well, Colonel Cook, you want to comment on that?
Well, I know that the standards for the physical education or physical testing has actually become closer and closer as more women get in and more women show that they do have some strength. I do agree that that men have more physical upper body strength than women do. But I think that the people who are talking about wanting to get into the infantry or the armor are the people who would have that physical ability. The majority of women are actually going into other positions that are not as physically intense as what you are mentioning right there.
Colonel Loss, do you want to comment on that question from our listener?
I don't believe they've changed any of the standards. My impression of this is that the physical standards will be upheld. And so, as Chris said, the women that would be going into these fields would meet the same standards as men. And as we both or all know, there are many women out there that could take a man down or carry a man out with greater capability than, you know, some of the men that are out there.
Well, I think that physical fitness in general, and that's an old, old term, folks, physical fitness, but that does encompass weight training and training in cardiovascular, et cetera, have all taken on a new meaning. And the Army and all the military have really picked up on that. Isn't that right, Colonel Cook?
Yes, it definitely is. That basically the most physically fit people I have seen are the people who are already in the military. And, in fact, you can't even get in unless you have a baseline. And, in fact, men and women, both men and women, ages 18 to 36 at this point, 75% of them do not qualify for the military.
Richard, does that kind of answer your question down there at Fort Miles?
It does answer my question, although I'd just like to say it should be across the board. Should be no difference in the physical training test whatsoever. I don't care if you're a receptionist or if you're infantry, if you're in the battlefield.
Well, and I would say
I just don't buy it. It's been a while since I've been in the service. I have served with women, and they were double standards.
Well,
to be honest with you, they were very tough to work with.
Fair enough.
That's all I can tell you.
Yeah,
you know?
Fair enough. I do know that, as I said, the physical fitness standards have actually changed. They are to the point where literally sit-ups and the run are on an equal par. The push-ups, because women don't have quite as much of a upper body strength, are a little bit lower, but they're actually much closer than you might think.
Well, good. Richard, thank you very much for calling us from Fort Myers. How are things down there?
Very good. Nice and warm.
You get that?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much for being a call-in. Good. Well, and those of you out there can be just like Richard, 877-573-7825. Go ahead with where you were at your leisure.
Okay, so one of the things that I was going to say, we are talking about the lifting of the ground combat exclusion policy, which went into effect in 1994. We had unwritten rules before that, and it was lifted on January 23rd of this year. Full disclosure is that this ground combat exclusion policy actually only affects the Marines and the Army, because of the fact that the majority of the positions in the Air Force and the Navy have already been lifted. As of 3 years ago, I believe, 2010-ish, that was when the nuclear submarines finally started allowing women, and that was the last bastion, so to speak, in the Navy for this kind of thing. So it's really the Navy, or the Army and the Marines, who are dealing with ground combat troops, and therefore they are the ones who have this combat exclusion. Also, full disclosure is that they are in the process now, after having lifted the ban, they have till 2016 to actually fully implement the lifting of the ban. So there are still many positions right now that are not open to the people in the military, women in the military. So, Kathy, I said before the break that I'd really like to talk a little bit about what has happened at the senior leader level with regard to the military. So tell me what your impression of women in the military at the top levels is going through with this change.
Wow. That's kind of a broad question. The impact on senior leadership with this change, is that the question?
Well, what I mean is, let's put it this way. I know that right now, of the 13 active duty Army four-star generals, there is one that is female.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means to the military as a whole, from your perspective.
Okay. I hope I'm on the right track on this. As you said, there's one, and one of the reasons is because we were excluded from a lot of command positions and promotion to senior levels many times was based on combat experience. And so the, I guess you'd say, the weeding out process to get to the very senior level happens very early when women are excluded from certain areas. And so as you look at the impact of these changes, that should change the face of senior leadership overall. As you and I have seen, when we go into a meeting of our peers, we may be one or two females in a room full of all males. That changes perspective. It changes the outcomes of issues because you're not getting the voice of the female soldier in there, and you're not getting those I guess the fine leadership perspectives of the female soldiers.
Right. And another thing that a lot of people may not be aware, in the Army, the two highest, you know, of the four-star generals, the two what might be considered the highest positions are the Chief of Staff of the Army and the Training and Doctrine Command Commander. The Training and Doctrine Command Commander is often the person who becomes the Chief of Staff of the Army or has had that in his arsenal before he heads over to the Chief of Staff of the Army position. And at this time, or as of January 22nd, let's put it that way, they had a combat arms requisite for both of those positions. Mm-hmm. So that meant that for as long as we know, we will never see a Chief of Staff of the Army or a TRADOC commander who are female, except that with the lifting of the ban, that may change. So do you think that that would change the feelings of women coming into the military now?
Oh, absolutely. The mentorship that would be available would be much greater. We're in a world of PR, you know. If you're not seeing female leaders, then the career may not be looked at as an opportunity for some very well-qualified females out there.
Right.
Yeah, I think we'll change the whole face of It definitely has the potential to change the whole face of the military.
Yeah, I personally look at it from the perspective of now the glass ceiling really has been lifted.
Technically it has, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's still going to be some invisible barriers there, based on perception. Yeah, I think technically now it has been lifted.
Right. So this isn't going to affect us per se, because you and I are nearing the end of our careers with the military, mm-hmm. but it is going to affect the women who are coming in our footsteps. So we have about 30 seconds before the next break. So I think we'll talk about that a little bit as we come back, but I'm going to turn it back over to Bob for a moment.
Right. There we go. We're getting the countdown now. We got 25 seconds to the three-quarter mark. You're listening to Veterans Radio right here on WDEO and veteransradio.net. If you have a question for our guest, and Colonel Lotz, then please call us at 877-573-7825. You're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be right back.
Okay, I think we're back.
Okay, those things happen, though. And you know what's really great about it? Because we're being military, both Colonel Cook and myself are Army people. You just improvise. You keep going, right?
That's right.
And you correct the situation, and you're back on track.
That's right.
That's right. So we're back. Colonel Cook, why don't you reintroduce your guest?
Okay.
All right, fire away.
We are speaking today with Colonel Kathy Lofts, who was a Women's Army Corps person and then went later on into the National Guard and now is in the Army Reserve. We are talking about the exclusion for combat positions being lifted for the women in the military. Now, when I first spoke with Kathy about this, her comment was that I'm of two minds on this issue. Kathy, I'd love for you to clarify that.
Okay. On one hand, I can do the whole female thing and say that we should have every opportunity that a man has, and I do believe that the opportunities should be the same. Even though men and women are different, the opportunities should be equal. But the second mind of that is that I realize the effects of change. And you mentioned earlier in the program about, the sexual harassment issues that are coming to light. I'm not sure that there's more sexual harassment, but there certainly is more awareness of it. And that kind of shows me in some respects that our society and our microcosm of society may not be as well prepared for the change as it should be. Sometimes we make a change without making the support structure to go with it. And so my second mind is those second and third order effects of the change, and that is the military itself effectively prepared to support the change and the effects of the change? And then the other effects are that I do... I have a lot of friends and buddies that are spouses of the military, and the whole family program will certainly be affected by this kind of change.
Right, because so many of the people who are going to be, if a woman goes to war, then the person that they are married to who is part of the family group is going to be male.
Most likely, yes. And then again,
well, that's true.
It is strictly a perception issue because, again, you have people in business going to conferences with, mixing male and female. You have, as you've mentioned earlier, we've had women in combat for a lot longer than what the society will admit to. But when you're dealing with the spouses and the PR that goes along with a change like this, there's some worry out there.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And as I said at the top of the program, this is a subject that the majority of people in the military kind of don't talk about, which may be one of the reasons why we're having a problem with the fact that as a culture, we're not necessarily prepared to go into that. Would you agree with that?
I would fully agree with that, yes. As you mentioned, sometimes you just hope it kind of goes away, or if it could go into effect without all of the hoopla, it could probably be dealt with better.
Right. Now, what in your perception are the biggest issues that are going to have to be faced during the implementation process over the next 3 years, I guess?
One is going to be dealing with those family issues. Another is really going to be going back and dealing with the issues we are having military-wide in terms of sexual harassment. They've got to nail that down. They've got to make that situation better.
Colonel, do you feel that there's been an appropriate response since all this came to light a few weeks back? Has there been an appropriate response as for your feelings?
Appropriate response
From the higher ups, right.
For sexual harassment.
Yes.
I think we're all kind of lost in terms of what is the right response. I think, so appropriate is a strange word. I think there has been the best response they can think of at this time. I wish I knew the right answer in the right program to deal with it. But I know they've revamped the education software for soldiers to take the training in sexual harassment awareness and response. It's an excellent program training to go through. Does it hit home? Does it hit the right people? Are people actually listening? I don't know. And, you know, it's the old, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. Are the people that are inclined to harass even listening?
True enough. Well, Kathy, I want to thank you so much for being our guest today. You have truly been enlightening, and it's, I think, been a pretty good discussion, and maybe we'll have you on the program again sometime.
Okay, thank you, Chris.
Take care.
Wow. You know, there is there's so much issues and perspectives that can go on, but I like to see it. I like to see it keep going forward. It's about time, and it's about time that we're running out of time. That's right. We're less than a minute to go, Colonel Cook. Once again, even though we had, I don't even like to call them glitches. That's just the way things go sometimes. But we got back on the air. We got back on track. We got back on the mission. Isn't that right?
It's a radio obstacle course. We can do this.
Ooh. Did you hear that, Dale? Radio obstacle course. We'll have to use that more. Okay, well, thank you again, Colonel Cook. This is Bob Gould getting ready to say our goodbyes right here at Veterans Radio. Oh, and I hear the theme coming up. Yes, I do, a little bit. Mm-hmm. Next week, we're going to have the director of the Yankee Air Museum right out of Ypsilanti, Michigan. What is that all about? And the Honorable Congressman John Dingell. And right here, this is Bob Gould from Veterans Radio. We'll see you next week. You are dismissed.
All views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily of Veterans Radio or this station. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio, LLC.